It is Monday, June 24th, 2013, and this is episode 23 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell, and as usual, the thoughts and opinions I express on this podcast are mine and don't represent those of my employer. The first story I want to talk about tonight is something I posted on the blog a couple of days ago. This was in response to an article I saw in Tech World that talks about a McAfee report where they surveyed 500 IT professionals across the world and asked them questions about how long it would take to detect a security breach. The average time the respondents gave was about 10 hours. So the article rightly goes on to point out that TrustWave had recently released a report where they claim it takes an average of 210 days for an organization to detect a breach. And they point out that there's an obvious gap between how people believe they operate and what we see in practice. And I think that's definitely right. If you look at Mandiant's annual report, they claim 243 days on average to detect a breach. And the Verizon DBIR doesn't give a specific date, but it says roughly 66% of breaches in the scope of their report took from months to years to detect. So to me, that seems in line with the other numbers. The big issue I see here is not only do people apparently have a skewed version of reality in their head, it's important to understand that given the way most organizations assess and prioritize risk, they're asking this population of people to provide opinions on the state of their controls and the effectiveness of their controls and what additional things you should be focused on. So, for example, if you're trying to prioritize your list of IT security projects for the coming year or come up with a five-year strategy, and you have a group of people who believe that it would take an average of 10 hours to detect a breach, you may come to the incorrect assessment that you don't need to invest in proactive detection. Because after all, 10 hours is not an unreasonable amount of time to detect a breach. But the reality is, it's going to be far, far longer than that. And maybe you, as an organization, really ought to be focusing on improving your ability to detect breaches. I think the net lesson on this item is to be skeptical about subjective opinions and really focus on using objective data and not opinions in risk assessments. And having people choose numeric values for risks and threats and frequencies is subjective. It seems like it's numerical and mathematical, but at the end of the day, if you ask someone to rate high, medium, or low the effectiveness of your controls to detect a breach, they're going to say that they're very high, highly effective, and the likelihood that a breach would go undetected is low. And when you put that into your spreadsheet and everything multiplies out, the items around detection end up falling by the wayside because you appear to have an effective mitigating control. So that's just something to be aware of as you work on your risk assessments and prioritize your spending. All right, the next story is about OPPetrol. So as you may or may not know, last week was the target day for an anonymous operation called OPPetrol, which was intended to target major petroleum companies and some governments around the world because oil is traded in dollars and not in local currency. So once again, a lot of attention was paid to this, and as an article in Tech Week Europe says, the Operation Petrol attacks passed like tumbleweed. As with most of the recent anonymous operations, there were a number of claims made about records breached and websites breached and whatnot, but most of it seems pretty questionable. Some of the websites that they did list were highly suspect. For instance, DenverFinishedBasements.com, I believe, was one of them, and you could definitely see the linkage between defacing some basement interior contractor with forcing the hand of the evil petroleum industry to stop trading their oil in dollars. Seriously, though, I looked at a number of the, I think, 142 websites that were claimed to be hacked. A good number of them were all on the same IP address, which to me says that they were on a shared hosting environment, and one of the sites was probably running a vulnerable version of WordPress and got compromised, and all of the associated sites on that same server also got compromised. However, I think even that's a little questionable because it seemed like some of those websites had already been compromised, according to some of the reports I had been reading. I think where we're at now is that the real teeth of Anonymous is in the threat. So we've really not seen a very effective campaign by them in quite some time. And I suspect there's good reason for that. Obviously, a lot of the main players have been arrested. A lot of probably who's left is working as an informant for the government. And my characterization is that anybody who has a beef with anything anywhere in the world can string together some crap, post it on a pastebin under the Anonymous banner, create some video, and it's off to the races. There's a lot of people who are very sympathetic around the world to the causes and ideas of Anonymous and social change, and some of that is clearly genuine, but when you watch these operations unfold, you see a lot of people kind of sitting around on their hands, not wanting to participate because obviously they don't want to get caught up in it. But Anonymous has had a lasting impact on the psyches of a lot of organizations. And so when we see a threat like this, there's obviously an inclination to take it seriously. But the reality is there's not a whole lot you can do. The reality also is that most of these organizations are already being attacked in the same way on a daily basis that Anonymous would have attacked them. So most of these major companies have had persistent DDoS attacks for quite some time, and so they've already put in place DDoS mitigation strategies. And yet every time Anonymous announces one of these operations, it spins up quite a lot of activity inside many organizations to try to make sure they are well prepared for it. Now, I've started to wonder if possibly there are some people who may be taking advantage of the Anonymous name to basically dummy up some phony operations, knowing very well that any Anonymous operation is going to be paid very close attention to. And would potentially allow people who report on that operation to make a fair bit of money in advertising come the day of the operation. I don't think it's very hard to craft an anonymous operation and get some frenzy whipped up behind it, and then start dropping your website as the authoritative source for what's happening, and then basically sit back and watch the traffic come in. I'm not proposing that's already happened. I'm just theorizing that at some point, I think the Black Hat SEO crowd will likely recognize that this is an opportunity to get a lot of eyeballs and links to their websites. And when you combine that with the fact that this is somewhat taxing on organizations, you know, because we spend quite a lot of effort trying to prepare for these things, even though there's really nothing to them, it says to me that organizations need a better way to determine the veracity of these threats. I certainly don't have the answer, but what we're doing now doesn't seem to be working very well. All right, the next story is from Zscaler. On their research blog, they describe an interesting, I guess I'll call it a watering hole attack on Government Security News. The GSN site and about 64 other websites apparently had been compromised and included what I would assume is an iframe to a third-party site. And that third-party site, of course, included some Java exploit code. So this is another example of why it's important to really take a close look at how your people are accessing the internet and doing what they do, using the same system to access the internet and quote legitimate sites while also performing sensitive activities for your organization. All right, the next story comes from Brian Krebs. EMET 4.0 was just released. This is a really nice piece of technology, especially something that's given away for free by Microsoft. I highly, highly, highly recommend organizations take a look at this. EMET will allow you to force different applications running on a system to take advantage of the different exploit mitigation techniques available in Windows. So things like ASLR, DEP, and some anti-ROP type techniques. And another thing that is new in EMET 4 is some certificate verification that will help prevent man-in-the-middle attacks. The downside to that is it really only works for Internet Explorer, but the other technologies can be wrapped around your Firefox or Chrome web browsers, which is good. All right, the next story comes from a Gartner blog post, and it is about a Harvard Business Review post that apparently gives some pretty bad advice on how to be a CISO. So the Harvard Business Review article basically hypothesizes a scenario where the chief security officer of an organization is granted a wish to become chairman of the board for 10 minutes. And in that 10 minutes, he grills the CEO about his ignorance of all things cybersecurity and ends up firing the CEO when the CEO doesn't recognize the full fury of the threat landscape. And then goes on to tell the rest of the board that the CSO is at least as important as the CFO. And I think the point of the Gartner article is to say this is a kind of a stereotypical view of security people, that we do security for security's sake, and not that this is in support of making money. And I would say this, at the end of the day, security is about risk management. It is not done just to be secure. It is done to counter risks that exist in an organization. And so just like making an investment, just like buying a company might be risky, doing a particular thing a particular way in an organization is going to have different levels of risk, and different organizations are going to have different tolerances for those risks. So my view is that the job of the chief security officer is to really understand the strategy of the business and to help minimize the risk within the framework of how the company wants to do business and its risk tolerance. So the author of the Gartner Post pokes a lot of fun at the Harvard Business Review article about how the CEO is laughed at when he doesn't get how dire the situation is. And some would say if the CEO doesn't understand how dire the situation is, you have to wonder, is that the CEO's problem or the CSO's problem? In any event, I think both articles are a pretty good read. I would advise you to go and find the link in the show notes and read the Harvard Business Review article first and then read the Gartner Post and make your own conclusions. I think it's worth a couple minutes of time. And you keep in mind, this is what business really wants out of us. All right, the next story is about LinkedIn. Now, I guess this story is a couple of days old now, but LinkedIn had an outage. And as part of that outage, their site appeared to be redirected to a totally unrelated organization. And while that was going on, there was quite a lot of banter about LinkedIn being hacked and their DNS records being hacked and on and on and on. But at the end of the day, it appears to be an error made by some people at Network Solutions, who was the registrar for LinkedIn. Apparently, Network Solutions was responding to a DDoS attack and inadvertently made some changes, which led to this problem. Now, on Network Solutions' blog, they say that a, quote, small number of sites were impacted. But apparently, that small number is about 5,000, at least according to this article. So to me, this says organizations really need to have a pretty good strategy to detect when their DNS environment goes totally wrong. We have seen quite a number of attacks lately that involve registrars and hijacking domain records and pointing them to malicious third-party sites. So building a capability of detecting this type of thing is becoming increasingly important, and being able to not only detect it but respond to it quickly, let your customers know, hey, we've got a problem, don't visit our site right now, maybe it's through Twitter or some other mechanism. Or to be able to say, you know, this is an error and we're working with our registrar to correct it. If you're a very popular site, the worst thing is going to be silence, because people will assume the worst. And my last story is from Network World, and the title is Too Many CSOs Ignore the Reality of Today's Threats. So the author goes on to describe Richard Ramirez, who was a serial killer back in the 80s, and how he would target victims by entering their houses through open doors or open windows, and obviously he would kill them because that's what serial killers do. But he would also focus on houses that were close to freeways so that he could have a quick getaway. And his point was that despite people realizing from obviously news reports that his victims were in unlocked houses, people still in that area still left their houses unlocked and their windows open. And so basically you have a situation where people wring their hands about this serial killer on the loose, but aren't really changing their behavior in a way that would minimize the likelihood of them being impacted. And partly because from the perspective of a person, you don't think that something really bad can happen to you. You live in a very large community. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of houses. The likelihood of that happening to you are pretty low, so therefore you don't feel a personal need to do anything different. And the author here equates what is happening in the world of security with that mindset. Basically, our doors and windows are open. The APT thieves are running in, pillaging our houses and running out. And all the while, we are just wringing our hands about the threat of APTs. But we don't really do anything different about it. Now, I have some mixed feelings about the concept here. On the one hand, if you have an adversary who is a foreign government, they're probably going to find a way to get what they want. They can't do it by getting someone to click on an email. They're probably going to be able to do it by bribing one of your employees or hiring in one of their agents or something else. And obviously that depends on how badly they want what you have. But if you are seriously worried about government-related APTs, these are the kinds of things you have to worry about. The whole point of the P is that it's persistent. The attackers aren't going to give up because a particular strategy didn't work. Now, on the other hand, we see that these actors, advanced persistent threats, if you will, are often using really, really simple tools. So phishing emails and poison ivy backdoors, that sort of thing. So yes, there's quite a lot that could be done to minimize the threat. I think at the same time, though, we have to recognize that even if we close that door, it doesn't mean the threat's going to go away. I definitely think it makes a lot of sense to close those doors because it isn't only the government actors who are exploiting it. It's, you know, whoever can find it. So to me, the moral of the story is make it as hard as possible on all of the actors, and you will get some benefit against those, quote, APTs. Some of the challenge, obviously, is the squishiness of the term APT. Can a organized crime syndicate be an APT, or is it always China? So back to the point about risk management, if your business is so critically hinged on the intellectual property that you have, you probably need to work that into your business plan. And tighter controls become a cost of doing business. On the other hand, if you're a grocery store and don't have a lot to lose if China gets in and sees your inventory, you may not be able to justify some over-the-top controls. But if you are an aerospace company making missiles or rockets or satellites, you probably have a lot to lose, both monetarily and from a national security standpoint. However, the grocery store is probably going to be squarely in the sights of organized crime who are looking to steal credit card records or other financial transaction information so they can commit fraud and steal money. But unlike the advanced persistent threat, usually those crime syndicates are really after targets of opportunity. If they can't easily get into your organization, they're going to move on because they're not about your specific organization. They're just about getting money. They don't really care where it comes from. They care about getting it as easily as possible with the lowest amount of risk as possible. Well, that's all I have time for today. I look forward to talking to you again next week. And until then, take care. Bye.